from the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Our show today is on special courts, and we are truly honored to have two principals who are really experienced in this concept of special courts, community courts. Russell Cannon, he is the presiding judge of the criminal division of the D.C. Superior Court. We also have Michael Francis, the community court coordinator, again, the criminal division of D.C. Superior Court. The website for the D.C. courts, or D.C. Superior Court, is www.dccourts.gov. They're also on Twitter, on Facebook, and on YouTube. And to Judge Cannon and Michael Francis, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Hello.
All right. Your Honor, Judge Cannon, let's talk about community courts. Give me a definition as to what community courts are.
Community courts are an outgrowth of the drug court movement. Over 20 years ago, when D.C. was overrun by crack cocaine cases, we instituted a drug court to try to change the cycle of arrest, incarceration, release, and rearrest. And the drug court movement was based on the principles of judicial monitoring, sometimes sanctions, and treatment and rehabilitation. Drug courts have proven to be a great success, both in the District of Columbia and nationally. I think the research on drug courts clearly shows that it reduces the use of drugs and reduces recidivism for those who successfully complete the programs. With that in hand, the community court movement is a collaboration with our criminal justice partners, the probation department, pretrial services, the defense bar, the prosecution, Metropolitan Police Department, the Department of Mental Health, Department of Corrections, in order to reach low-level nonviolent offenders and try to change the cycle of arrest, incarceration, release, and rearrest by providing a number of different elements. Number one, provide community service in the community where the crime took place, paying back that particular community by providing educational or employment opportunities, by having the judges become directly responsible for a particular community. So a judge would routinely, on a monthly basis, go to community meetings and talk about our program, answer questions, be more educated as to particular problems in a particular community. The defendants get an opportunity to have their cases dismissed if it's a pretrial case. That is a case that's pending trial. If they're eligible, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, our prosecutors, set that forward. For defendants who are not eligible to get their case dismissed, if they complete their community service, some of them will be placed on probation. And we've done a lot of work now having probation reviews with the probationer, and it's been proven that this one-on-one interaction between the judge and the defendant during the course of the case really has a significant factor in reducing recidivism and having individuals become compliant. Overall, it's a it's an evidence-based program that is we're relying upon proven programs that work to show reduction of recidivism and to reach out to the community.
Right. Now, I'm going to go back to the literature for a second, and I want you to talk to me about this, is that a lot of the research that's coming out of the Department of Justice, a lot of the research that's coming out from universities is basically saying that judge-driven programs like community courts, other specialty courts, drug courts seem to work. Some of them are suggesting that the magic ingredient is the judge himself or herself, that judges taking the lead in terms of these issues are solving a lot of problems for the criminal justice system. What's your take on that?
Well, there are two aspects to that. One is that I believe the leadership of our court for many years with our drug court, our community court, our mental health court has been really the focus of trying to get together our collaboration with our criminal justice partners. So I think the court being a part of that and being a leadership in that collaboration is critical. And second, I think you're referring to the interaction between the judge and the defendant going outside the normal calling balls and strikes and just litigating a case. So a judge and drug court or mental health court or community court is more invested with the individual in trying to change behavior, trying to get the folks off this cycle of arrest and rearrest, and trying to help lead and inspire that individual to change their lives. We call it coaching, cajoling, and congratulating, and it's been proven to be successful.
Right, but why is that? I mean, if the literature is basically saying, look, you know, you take a look at a lot of the research programs within the criminal justice system, whether it be law enforcement, whether it be juvenile justice, whether it be corrections, and look at all these research programs that show that judges and specialty courts are having an impact, a greater impact in some cases. I'm referring to Project Hope in Hawaii. They have a greater impact than some of the mainstream efforts that we in the criminal justice system have been employing. So it just seems to me that the judiciary, instead of taking a back seat as it was when I came on into the criminal justice system many decades ago, it seems to me that more judges are taking a leadership role in solving problems within their communities.
Well, there's no question that the research shows, and any judge who sat on these courts would be able to say as well, that this interaction between the defendant and the judge in the courtroom and the judge's ability to inspire, to cajole if necessary, and sometimes that includes incarceration, and to congratulate, to try to inspire them to change their lives. They're not used to having this type of one-on-one time with the judge who's clearly interested in their development and their rehabilitation, and it works. I mean, there's no question that the drug court movement and the community court movement, the evidence now is overwhelming. I mean, the jury is in on that. They work. They're successful. And that's why many courts such as ours are expanding.
Michael Francis, the community court coordinator. Your take on all this, please, Michael?
Well, I think the research has shown that when defendants see that the judge is caring and there's fairness, it impacts their behavior. So that's, I think, a key aspect. There's a psychological dynamic to this in terms of them altering the behavior and being willing to change their behavior based on that interaction with the judge.
Mm-hmm. But it is also, at the same time, as different people have pointed out, it's a judge. It's not a parole and probation agent. It's not a pretrial officer. It's a judge. And that judge does have the power to send you to jail and send you to prison. So people are suggesting, well, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to that person. That's a judge than I'm going to pay to a parole and probation agent. That's what some are suggesting.
I see what they're saying, but the judge does make the decision in terms of one's whether they're locked up or not. So,
right.
I mean, that's a key aspect. That's part of the reality that exists.
Now, Michael, you're in charge of basically the nuts and bolts of the community court. And so you're the person, the go-to person on a day-to-day basis. I would imagine that's an immense undertaking, because what you're doing is seemingly taking, and correct me if I'm wrong, lower-level cases and to try to find a reasonable alternative rather than placing this person in the mainstream criminal justice system. So through community service, through drug treatment, through a fine, that what you're trying to do is to say, is there an alternative way of dealing with this individual than the normal criminal justice process, correct?
Partially. I mean, my office, one of the key aspects in terms of my office is assigning defendants to community service.
Right.
And so we have 32 community service throughout the city. But also we have, as Judge Cannon talked about, we collaborate and partner with other agencies. So in terms of defendants that need substance abuse, they can be referred to pretrial services or see SOSA. So my office doesn't necessarily always make the referrals for someone to get the treatment.
Right.
But we are a linkage, and we partner with other agencies, and we make referrals. So that's a key aspect of it.
And I do want to plug my own organization, Court Services, and Offender Supervision Agency, a federal parole and probation agency, providing services to the District of Columbia. We are supporting both of you in this role. So the community, somewhere along the line, again, start talking about that concept of community. When I came in, the judges were God and goddesses who sat up high We never spoke to him. We never dealt with him. It was, yes, Your Honor. You know, we never, you know, never openly disagreed with him outside the court or inside the court. They were that lofty and that high. Now you're attending a lot of community meetings. Now you're listening to a lot of the sentiment within the community. Now you're reaching out and now you're interacting. That indeed is a big change. So it's just not specialty courts. It's really this focus on community courts is a lot of involvement with community leadership, Your Honor. Oh, Michael.
Well, I just want to say, and the community really appreciates it when judges go out into community to meet with them, to listen, to hear what they have to say. So it's very beneficial. For instance, so far this year, we've attended, judges have attended over 38 community meetings. And the community lets us know they're so happy when judges come to talk to them, to hear what their concerns and the issues are. So it's a key aspect in terms of that partnership and collaboration and that we're all in this together. I think that's key when the community sees that everyone is concerned about what's happening in their communities. I mean,
but do both of you buy into my premise that at one time the judiciary was not that way?
I think that's not quite accurate. I mean,
okay,
judges have traditionally gone out to community meetings when asked and invited. I've been going for many years. We've now routinized this and make a judge, so a particular judge who's sitting in the third district cases in our third district will go out to the third district and to various different types of community meetings. And so that judge will be well known in that particular district because she's a presence and they know her. And she's there to answer questions. And that's a big part of it, too. One, just letting people know what's really going on in the criminal justice system. There's a lot of misinformation out there and people don't always truly understand the workings of the court,
right,
and how when people do get arrested and they go through the system and they don't, oftentimes don't understand the full complexities of the law, and the judges are there, if for no other reason, to explain those things, but also to show that they care about the community and willing to work with them.
Okay.
And I just want to add, when the community sees that defendants are being held accountable, for instance, having to do community service back in their communities where the alleged offense occurred, they think that's very important in terms of trying to help their communities.
Three things that I want to get to. Number one, give me a sense of the other specialty courts within the criminal division. Number two, give me a sense as to the mechanics as to how community courts work. And then I want to get to, well, probably that'll be the second half of the program, I want to get to the fact that you've been studied. You've had a piece of research and recidivism has gone down. So let's start off with the other specialty courts so the audience throughout the country can get a sense as to all the different things that you guys are involved in.
Well, we also have, as I said before, we've had a drug court for over 20 years now. And that the success of the drug court then led us to create what we call the East of the River Community Court, which was a community court that dealt with two of our police districts east of the Anacostia River. And we've had that program on for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was the program that was evaluated in the last couple of years by an independent research organization, which showed a significant and substantial reduction in recidivism, up to 42% for those for the comparison group. We've also now have a mental health community court. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to work all these courts in union with each other. So, for instance, when an individual comes in, that person's going to be assessed. So if the person really's main problem is going to be mental illness or being involved in the mental health system, then we're going to refer that person to the mental health court. If the person's main problem is drug addiction, then we're going to refer that person to the drug court. If the person is not otherwise addicted or mentally ill and requires those core services, then they may be eligible for our community court.
Okay, the mechanics of this. What levels within the community court, what levels of people are you going after? So a person convicted of a violent crime is not going to go to community court.
That's correct. And I do need to mention that we also have what's called the D.C. Community Court. That was actually our first community court that started in January 2002. and that handles the lowest level of misdemeanors, what we call DC misdemeanors,
right,
and criminal traffic offenses. So
right,
that community court also exists. My staff are very involved as far as assigning community service, as well as we have staff that actually does assessments of defendants that are locked up to see what their social service needs are,
okay,
and to try to actually link them with services, whether it be mental health, educational services, vocational. So I just wanted to mention that's a community
sure
court that we've had for a while.
But the average person going into the community courts within the District of Columbia, again, they're lower-level offenders, they're misdemeanors, they're
U.S. misdemeanors for our community court expansion project, and the community courts that consist of the 1st District Community Court, the 2nd District, 4th District Community Court, 3rd District Community Court, 5th District Community Court, 6th District, and 7th District Community Court, they handle U.S. misdemeanors. We're talking about offenses such as prostitution, illegal dumping, simple assault, simple drug possession. There are many more, but that's some of the core U.S. misdemeanor offenses. And Judge Cannon, I don't know if he wanted to elaborate.
But hold on. But, for the audience, the judge sitting in Milwaukee right now is going, what are they talking about, a U.S. misdemeanor? What is a U.S. misdemeanor?
Well, that's sort of a creature of the District of Columbia. We have prosecuting authorities. The U.S. Attorney's Office handles most of what generally is considered state court crimes, such as theft, possession of drugs, prostitution, et cetera. The city prosecutes in the city's name some of what we think of generally as quality of life crimes, possession of open container of alcohol, okay, operating after suspension, driving offenses. And there's a separate court for those in those cases as well.
Okay. So I'm going to we're halfway through the program. Let's stop here and just reintroduce the two of you and get to a bit more explanation and get over to the research, which I find phenomenal. Ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing today with the topic of community courts. At our microphones, Russell Cannon. He is the presiding judge of the Criminal Division for the D.C. Superior Court. Also before our microphones is Michael Francis. He is the Community Court Coordinator, again, Criminal Division for the D.C. Superior Court. The address, web address, www.dccourts.gov, www.dccourts.gov. Also on Twitter, also on Facebook, also on YouTube. So we're going back to the conversation. Judge Cannon, so there are U.S. crimes committed on federal land that are minor.
Well, not federal lands. It's, D.C. in the District of Columbia.
Okay. But when you say U.S., we're talking about D.C. code violations as well, are we?
They are all D.C. code.
They are all D.C. code violations. Okay, that's the point that I wanted to get to. Okay, so because you guys don't handle the U.S. Federal violations.
Well, we're getting a little... The U.S. Attorney's Office in Milwaukee, for instance, would handle federal crimes.
Yes.
The state court would handle state court crimes such as robbery or assault, et cetera. In D.C., because D.C. is an unusual jurisdiction, our U.S. attorney would handle federal crimes in the federal court.
And, for both.
But and the state court crimes in the Superior Court.
Okay, but they're D.C. code violations. That's the thing that I wanted to get across. Okay, the evaluation. Most of the evaluations that I've seen, and I read just about everything that comes out, you're going to find reductions in the range of 10 to 20% when you find reductions at all. Most of the reductions in terms of the interventions that happen throughout the United States are modest in terms of their return. Some are better, some are promising, and we're learning an awful lot about it. But we've been told not to overpromise in terms of the impact of what we do in terms of community corrections. You guys, on the other hand, sort of like Project Hope in Hawaii, that turned out wonderful results in terms of your evaluation for the D.C. community. Community courts, correct?
Yes.
And what was it, in the range of what, 40%?
40% of those who graduated from our community courts in the 6th and 7th district had a 42% less chance of recidivism when compared to similarly situated defendants in the 5th district.
That's a phenomenal result. It's a phenomenal result. It's an unusual result. Why did you get such a large reduction?
Well, we like to think that is the judicial leadership and with our criminal justice partners and the program that we set forth and the investment of time that everyone has put into this with the assistance of the community that has helped bring these results. Now, our report didn't measure how the reasons for that for reduction of recidivism, but we've now authorized to do another report on our new project, because we now, armed with this success, we have now expanded our community courts citywide. So
right, that's the other exciting thing here. So you're going from experiment to a citywide endeavor.
Right. So instead of just a 6th and 7th district, people who get arrested in the 1st district will be going to the 1st district community court and the 3rd district, et cetera. So this is a pretty vigorous and robust change in our practice in the courts, but we're very hopeful. Our results so far have been superb. We're really excited by it. We have hundreds and hundreds of hours of community service. 80% of those who enter into our agreements to do community service, over 80% have completed them successfully. Mm-hmm. We go out, and Mike has done a great job in the community, bringing community service, nonprofit organizations, churches, et cetera, and we interact with them on a daily basis. We bring them into the court. We debrief with them. They've been extremely pleased with our efforts. So far, right now, we're having about, for instance, 200 new defendants enter into community court program. Last year, we probably had about 50 to 60, so we've doubled that amount.
Right.
And we've quadrupled, quite frankly, the amount of community service hours. And so we're very excited that so far, so good.
Now, the mechanics of this are if they successfully complete community court, what happens? Either one of you.
Well, there's two parts to it. If for those, the lower-level offenders with a modest criminal history, they're going to get their case dismissed.
Okay.
That's the end result for the defendants. And, yes, the interaction between the judge is a great thing, but the incentive to have their case dismissed is great. And my hat is off to our U.S. Attorney's Office, our prosecutors, for being very flexible and a full partner in all this, because none of this would happen without the without the full partnership with our prosecutors, the United States Attorney's Office. The other class of defendants are those whose records are not as modest, but still eligible for probation. And they're placed on probation. That is, they're not going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
But they are being placed on probation, being supervised by your agency.
Yep.
But now the judges are meeting them, not waiting for a time where all of a sudden there's some problem and they bring the defendant in 4 or 5
right.
months later with a problem, which might lead to revocation probation. We're going to see that defendant 30 days after they're placed on probation so that they know the judges mean business, so they know they're going to be watched over very carefully. And this is brand new. We just started this part in July. And we've had, but so far it looked like it's promising. The probation department, your agency, is enthusiastically, it's more work for everyone, enthusiastically coming to court, bringing the defendants there. And our goal, quite frankly, in this part of the project is to substantially increase to those numbers of defendants who successfully complete probation.
And if I just want to add,
please, Michael.
And when we refer to districts, we're actually referring to, in the city, there are 7 police districts. So
thank
when
you.
We have a first district community court, it coincides with those defendants that are arrested within the first district. Also, it's important to realize that the community courts are physically, for instance, located at the D.C. Superior Court headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Main office, Moultrie Building. So some community courts are actually in specific neighborhoods,
right?
But some actually are centrally located like ours.
Okay.
Well, to be clear, we do not have individual courts, community courts, in the 1st District or the 5th District.
Right.
Everyone comes to the main courthouse.
Right.
In some community courts around the country, in Red Hook, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Midtown, it's literally the courthouse is in the community.
In the community.
But that was just fiscally not possible for us.
Okay. Michael, the mechanics of all of this now, you know, there are a waiting list in this city, in every city in the United States, for drug treatment, for mental health treatment, for cognitive behavioral therapy. I mean, how do you get people involved in the programs that they need to be involved in?
Well, for instance, the agency, Pretrial Service Agency, as well as U.S. Attorney's Office, are involved in the screening of defendants in terms of their appropriateness for perhaps drug court or mental health court. And in fact, if that may be the case, their cases could actually be referred over to the mental health court or the drug court for services.
Yeah, but are the services there? That's the average person sitting there throughout the country listening to this program is going to say, well, you all have resources that we don't have. If I want to get somebody into drug treatment, they're put in a queue, and 3 months later they're called up, and it's forever to get somebody involved in drug treatment. There are budget cuts throughout the United States.
That's correct. But
how is it working in D.C.?
It works because they're actually received the services. Pretrial services provides a linkage to drug treatment programs, as well as providing drug treatment services themselves, as well as your organization, CSOSA. We also have actually linkages and as part of the partnership with the Addiction Prevention Recovery Administration, which is part of the D.C. Government Department of Health, the agency responsible for helping defendants with substance abuse issues. They actually have staff at the court where actually we can make referrals to, as well as they actually will go to those that are locked up and do screenings for the need for substance abuse. So, yes, we actually have those services.
And people can link people to those services.
People
are sitting back throughout the country and going, wow, you know, within the District of Columbia, there's just a level of involvement and a level of services that we don't have here in Milwaukee or Honolulu and throughout the country. Now, you all hosted the National Community Court Conference of this year, right?
Well, no, we participated. It was a National Community Court Conference was hosted by the Center for Court Innovation, and I'd like to give them a shout out as well. They're based in New York. They're the ones who started or helped organize the two community courts in New York, Red Hook and Manhattan Midtown. But part of their work is to assist courts like ours to help developing these programs. So they were the hosts of that program and happened to be in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
But they've been really good partners with us as well in assisting us and giving us advice and technical assistance as we've gone forward.
But the superior, Michael, go ahead, please.
And just going back to, I think it's important regarding services and resources, we actually have what's called, and it's very unique, it may be the only one that exists in the country, we have what's called the Urgent Care Clinic, which is a collaboration with D.C. Superior Court, the Department of Mental Health, and Pathways to Housing, where actually there are staff from Pathways to Housing, including a psychiatrist that's physically located at the court that can provide services to people with mental health issues. So that's really key when you asked about so when people may have mental health issues that have cases before the court, they can be referred to the urgent care clinic for screening and then to long-term linkage. They see a psychiatrist, assessments are done. So that's a unique aspect that we have. We're also working with developing a relationship with the Department of Employment Services here in D.C. to actually be able to refer defendants for workforce, not just defendants, but the people that come through D.C. Superior Court for various issues for workforce development services. This is all part of the whole importance of collaboration and partnership, the whole community concept.
First of all, I do want to thank you guys for taking the leadership in terms of D.C. Safe Surrender. You were able to coax a whole mess of people into with warrants to voluntarily surrender at the court. We did it the first time around in terms of doing it in the church, and we were told, no, you have to do it in the church if you're going to entice people to voluntarily surrender in warrants, and you did it within a court setting, so congratulations. You guys are taking a leadership role in lots of different areas. I'm not quite sure anybody fully understands the complexity and the leadership roles that the Superior Court is taking within the District of Columbia. But we all do understand, I think, that this is a different, fundamentally different thing in the final minute of the program. There's a fundamentally different way of approaching problems within the criminal justice system. People have mental health issues. People have substance abuse issues. They're not fully committed to the criminal justice system, where in the past they would have ended up in the mainstream criminal justice system. You're trying to assist them. You're trying to help them escape that cycle, and you're trying to get them out of the criminal justice system, not in, correct?
Well, of course. There are a number of individuals who constitute a clear danger to the community and constitute a public safety hazard. And unfortunately, those individuals oftentimes need to be incarcerated. But they're fortunately in the minority. There are many other people who, if you give them the appropriate services, mental health, housing, employment, education, etc., that we can turn them around and make a real difference so they don't come back to court and so that they can really stand in their community and be an asset to their community.
Michael, 30 seconds.
And it's important that because the community often asks, well, are you coddling these folk? Defendants are held accountable. We try to link them and provide them some assistance. and provide services for them if they want them. They have to do community service, but if they don't take advantage of it, they are held accountable. So that's key. So it's important.
Go ahead. Quick.
Well, I just want to add to what Michael said. The law enforcement is really behind our program as the Metropolitan Police Department, the prosecution, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Office of the Attorney General. They are full partners in all this.
Gentlemen, I really want to thank you for being with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, our program has been on community courts. We've had two guests with us today, Russell Cannon, the presiding judge of the Criminal Division, D.C. Superior Court, and Michael Francis, community court coordinator. Again, Criminal Division, D.C. Superior Court. The website is www.dccourts.gov. Follow them on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate your criticisms. We appreciate any feedback that you have to provide us, and we want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.